Time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee and Andy are here. We've got lots to talk about, including new apps using the notch, the special camera on the iPhone 10, and a look ahead at what the next iPhone might offer. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 584, recorded Tuesday, November 14th, 2017. A free pass from Darwin. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Molecule. Molecule is the world's first molecular air purifier that reduces symptoms for allergy and asthma sufferers and makes the air great. For $75 off your first order, visit Molecule, M-O-L-E-K-U-L-E.com, and enter the promo code MACBREAK. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. And by Joby. Joby's GorillaPod is the signature flexible tripod amongst leading photographers, journalists, and vloggers. It's changing the content creation game for good. Grip it, wrap it, stand it. See the full line at Joby.com and enter Twit at checkout to receive 15% off your order. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we get together every week to cover the latest news from Apple. Often no Mac news at all. Renee Ritchie's here from iMore.com.
I'm using a Mac, Leo. Is that enough? I'm using a Mac right now.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in front of one.
Actually, this week there may be some Mac news, actually.
Okay, good. I've been holding my breath.
Andy Anako also here from the Chicago Sun-Times. And
Hello.
Here we are in, what is it, week two of the iPhone 10 era.
Yes, I was looking at some pictures of people from before the iPhone 10 era.
The wide lapels, those flared trousers.
Did anybody used to wear their hair that way?
However, did they survive? Ming Chi Kuo from KGI Securities is back, our favorite analyst. Yes, it's time for iPhone 11 rumors. Well, actually, one rumor is we don't know what's going to be called, but he says there will be three late 2018 iPhones. They'll all be modeled on the iPhone 10, which is really not a surprise because, frankly, why wouldn't you? I do like the one interesting slice in this rumor that there'll be a 6.5-inch model, a huge iPhone. I'm not sure why they need three. 6.1, 6.5, oh, I guess 5.8. So small, medium, large. He said this last time and he was wrong. Well, maybe he wasn't, though. There were three this year. Yeah. So
there are a lot of interesting things to think about. For instance, let's say that they still have supply issues about getting the 3D face sensors and all that sort of stuff. Would they decide to make the notch a consistent feature across the board of all iPhones, whether it has Face ID or not? Or do they want to make sure that, look, if you see the notch, that implies that there's Face ID present?
Right. Apple says we're all in on the notch. We don't consider it a flaw. So
the thing that was interesting to me is that Apple, one of the reasons Apple reportedly went to OLED is that it's flexible. So they could literally bend the screen around back on itself and put the controller underneath it so that you wouldn't have to have any bezel at all. You could go corner to corner. Yeah, they're hugely rounded corners, but they are corner to corner without any bezel. And I didn't know if you could do that with LCD, but it was pointed out to me that some of the prototype sharp LCDs now, they've gotten good enough that you can have almost no bezel. It's a little bit thicker than what is on the iPhone 10 right now, but it's getting to the point where you can just pick your design and then your screen technology, which at least would help alleviate the supply concerns around OLED, which is still mostly a Samsung manufacturing constraint.
Although Apple has contracted both with Samsung and LG, although after seeing the LG display in the Pixel 2 XL, I think we're glad they went with Samsung.
They're pouring money into it. I mean, both Apple and Google are pouring. They would love to have, when you look at the markup that Samsung got for Apple on the OLED screens, Apple would love to have competition.
Yeah.
And I think Japan Display, and they're investing in other companies as well.
They'll figure it out. One of the three, according again to Kuo, one of the three phones, the mid-size 6.1-inch, will not be OLED. It'll be an LCD, lower resolution, and lower cost. You know, if we've learned anything from the iPhone X, and sales are apparently through the roof, nobody worries about an extra couple hundred bucks. The price does not seem to be a roadblock in any respect.
My Pixel was $1,500 Canadian.
Yeah. Yeah, these are not inexpensive. They're not quite
iPhone X. I think the Pixel and then the Note and then the iPhone X. I'm not sure.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with each of those, like with the Note, you're getting a really different device than from a standard phone. Also, we're talking about iPhone consumers as opposed to phone consumers. People who are price sensitive might have already decided that the iPhone is not for them to begin with. And also, it's unfortunately, Apple doesn't break down the numbers as finely as we would like. If you want to get some good knowledge about this, I think suffice to say that the people who are spending the extra $200 for the iPhone X are the sort of people who are exceptionally happy to have the very latest phone, or they are just simply paying X dollars a month forever just to get whatever phone is the latest and greatest, so they can swap in every October or September. My opinions of the iPhone X would be a lot different if they didn't have the iPhone 8, and if the iPhone 8 weren't such a superior phone. It's a wonderful, wonderful device. It's hard to see where they cut any corners whatsoever on the iPhone 8. So it's not as though the iPhone 8 is anyway a middle of the range phone. I think Apple did very, very well by saying we have the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus are our top of the line phone still, just like they've always been. The iPhone 10 is above our top of the line phone. That's the way you should think about it.
I have to say, now that I have the Pixel 2 XL, and I got mine just yesterday because I ordered it, a black and white one with the orange button, which apparently we're in short supply.
It's so cool. I love that the design. Color.
Yeah.
If people are willing to wait for the iPhone X, I'm willing to wait for the Panda with the orange button.
Yeah. That's what I call it. The Panda with the orange button. But now I've only spent a day with it. It's funny because the screen isn't actually bigger than the iPhone X screen. The phone is considerably bigger, but the iPhone, because it has zero bezels, and this one has a couple of top and bottom bezels, is a more compact device. I don't have any burn-in on this. I don't see any screen issues. I mean,
if you had burn-in today, Leo, there'd be a huge
problem. Well, in a way, I'm kind of, well, no, some people came out of the box burned in.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Yeah. But I also have to say that this isn't it has the OLED issues and so forth. If you didn't look at any other phone, if you didn't put it side by side with a Note 8 or an iPhone 10, it would be fine.
It also depends on your sensitivity, because I know people who can't look at an iPhone Plus because they see the scaling and the one pixel flicker as you scroll through things, and they're just like, I don't want to see that.
Right.
It's just some people are super sensitive.
Some people
to
care.
Any OLED because it has smearing when you do the scrolling.
Right.
So.
This is if you're an Android fan, this is definitely the phone to get, the Pixel 2 XL or the Pixel XL. They're very nice phones. I love a lot of the features. I have to say, I really do feel like the fingerprint reader is much more consistent for unlocking than Face ID. I kind of prefer it, but there is no question in my mind now, and it hasn't been for some years. I haven't picked an iPhone as the phone of the year, but there's no question in my mind that the best phone of 2017 is the iPhone X by a long shot.
Yeah, I hate to say this, but I've got if your iPhone X arrived on the day of shipping, you have until Friday to return it and get your money back. And I got until Friday, and I was planning on going to the Apple store today to return it because now I have my Apple reviewing unit, so I can do my last couple weeks of stuff with it. I've got that little demon on my shoulder saying, but it's such a lovely phone, and maybe you should, you know, the latest iPhone you actually own is the iPhone 6 Plus, and maybe you should. I'm like, oh, it's $1,000.
Oh,
why do I like this phone so much that I'm willing to throw away $1,000 on a second phone?
It's a lot of money, and you know what? And like I said, I think it's been 3 or 4 years since, in my opinion, I try to pick the best phone of the year every time. And it's usually between an Android and an iOS phone. iOS has not, Apple has not won in several years. This one is, it's not even close. Yeah,
this one moves, Face ID really moves the needle. I was on the radio on NPR last week. Every question from the studio host was like, yeah, but do we trust it? And of course we had to tell the story about how Samsung's Galaxy S8 Face ID was broken in the room, in the demo room, right after the announcement. But the thing that makes this a star is that it's Face ID that actually works, that you would actually trust it for unlocking your phone. And although as we expected, just like the Touch ID has some weaknesses, just like all during the summer, if your hands are sweaty or if you've just been doing the dishes or whatever, you have to do a lot of wiping before Touch ID is going to work. Face ID, there's some instances in which it doesn't work, but good heavens, as soon as you've got a week under your belt where you just trust it to work and you're no longer artificially waiting to watch the lock unlock, dang it works really well. It really does move the needle. The edge-to-edge screen, okay, I've seen that before. It's the best screen, though.
I have to say it's the best screen I've ever used in terms of color reproduction and accuracy. It doesn't have the vivid colors and brightness of a Samsung Note or a S8, but I think it's the most accurate. It's just a beautiful, beautiful screen.
I agree with an asterisk. I think that it's kind of a problem now that so many manufacturers are touting, oh well, this camera got the best DxO score of any camera or whatever. This screen got the best numerical score of this other rating. And those are empirical. If you put these three phones side by side, I think most people would pick up the iPhone 10 screen. But when I go back to my Pixel version 1, which is my daily carry phone, or when I go back to my the iPhone 8 I've got that I'm locking down, I don't think I don't think it's a bad screen at all. And most people aren't going to be walking around with two or three phones side by side to compare. So Apple definitely gets points for having what I would consider to be the best screen in the business. But I don't think that alone would be the reason why someone would go for the iPhone 10 instead of the iPhone 8 or even an iPhone instead of an Android phone.
I don't think it's great that you can have an iPhone 8. Like, I have both my iPhone 8 Plus and my iPhone 8 and my iPhone 10 here, and they look almost the same, even though the LED ones or the LCD ones use profoundly different technology than the OLED ones, just because of all the color calibration and color management Apple's doing. They essentially look like an iPhone to me, and that's not always easy with OLED to pull off.
Yeah,
you got to remember, isn't it incredible that it's only this year that Android decided to make color management, color accuracy, a really highest level important function of the operating system. I guess not as though there were terrible displays before, but this is the first time that the operating system itself is going to say, here is what calibration means. Here is how to get accurate color from app to app and experience to experience. Whereas Apple, just like they were the first company to really focus on, make sure the typography was a really important part of the user experience, they were the first to decide that color management is going to be an important part of the phone experience from day one.
You mentioned.
Yeah, they decided.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, they decided that you literally could not ship a DCI P3 display to a customer without individually color calibrating it to the subpixel level. They just thought there was no point to color management without individual unit calibration.
And I'm guessing, I know you're waiting, your Pixel 2 XL is in the truck.
This week.
It's on its way, but I will guess when you look at this, you will say, the colors are not as accurate, and apparently they're batch calibrating.
I don't know if it'll bother me. It's like, I didn't know if the notch would bother me, and the notch, like, intellectually it bothers me, but in practical use it doesn't. And it might be the same thing with the Pixel, where I know about the because all OLED screens have problems, and I'll know about them, but I don't know if I'll notice them in day-to-day use.
You do see the off-axis blue a lot more in the Pixel than you do in the iPhone. However, the differences aren't so great that if you prefer Android, just as you said, Andy, you're not going to switch to the iPhone 10 and vice versa. They're both kind of top of the line in the category they represent. And if you're an Android fan, the Pixel 2 is actually great, I think.
It does teach a good lesson that the difference between – I've often thought about this. That the difference between a 99-cent burger at McDonald's and the $19 burger at this wonderful restaurant in Cambridge called Craigie's on Main, they only make about 20 a day, and they're definitely worth it. It's not so much that they're different. They're still – they don't put truffles. They don't put gold shavings on the top of it. They just simply choose every ingredient perfectly. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's the best kind of meat they can find. They make sure that they have quality control so that the grilling is perfectly fine. The bread is I think that you can have two phones that have kind of the same features. One of them costs $150 more than the other, but that $150 difference could simply be that we decided to throw out four displays before we put this one in your phone. Also, we spent about 10 hours calibrating it properly so that it would make sure that you would have the right color that this thing is capable of. So it's not feature for feature for feature. Sometimes there's money to be paid for just making sure that everything is done right, even if it doesn't necessarily have more features than another phone you're considering.
Yeah, and there are some people who it's a very individual thing. In fact, you're going to read all these reviews where they're really splitting hairs in many respects.
Yeah.
But people care. Some people care. And if you're the kind of person that cares, then you're going to have some, you know, decisions to make.
I just sometimes worry that as a reviewer, I'm more confusing yes. people or more giving people reason to doubt themselves. I'm still that before I bought my Olympus camera, which I absolutely still 3 or 4 years later, I still absolutely adore. I just got a taste of my own medicine about how I'm looking at every single camera site. They have these wonderful online like JavaScript based tools where here is. You pick any four cameras that you want, and it'll have this test pattern, which each camera, pick whatever four you want, then pick whatever ISO you want to pick it at. And I almost like changed my mind because I'm like, ooh, but at 12,800 ISO, there's a little bit more color balance in this model instead of the Olympus. And then finally, I had to say, look, as a total package, the Olympus is the right one. Right. I held it. I think it's right. I'm not going to talk myself out of it because of this. This graph has a little more delta G than this other graph. Like, so that's why I think that when I review stuff, I have to make sure I note things like, oh, gosh, the iPhone 10 has the best screen I've seen. But also note that. But when I went back to the iPhone 8, I didn't want to spit on it.
It's tough. You know, I can pick a path where I say, as a reviewer, I'm going to review it. Not from the specs, but just as the experience. That's kind of what I ended up deciding about photography, which is if you pixel peep like crazy, you can find all these differences. And certainly, you know, you can write about them. But I've kind of chosen consciously to say, but my beat is really, is this a pleasing photo or not? And, you know, and so the same thing with the phones. I prefer to do it that way.
Well, can you get the photo or not? Because in some cases, the camera can't get you the photo you want when you're in a party or a bar.
That's true too, isn't it? Yeah. So apparently, Face ID has been cracked, except, boy, you sure have to work hard to do it.
It's been spoofed. So people get really crazy about it, but it's technically, it's been spoofed, not hacked. Like no one broke into security.
Yes, that's a much better way to describe it. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It's like when Touch ID was, you know, someone took a fingerprint and put it on a sausage and was able to open Touch ID.
It's been spoofed. And in order to do it, you're going to spend hundreds of dollars and you're going to have to make a composite 3D printed mask. You're going to have to use silicone makeup and take pictures of your eyes, nose, and lips and use cutouts. And it works.
And we're not sure how because there's a liveliness test apparently where it has to have minor bits of movement. And we're not sure how it got past that or if they did put in a passcode to train it for the mask. There's a lot of stuff that we don't know still about.
I'm not too worried about somebody stealing my stuff.
The thing to remember is always that Face ID, just like Touch ID, it's a convenience feature, not a security feature.
Yeah.
They actually, ironically, in effect, duplicated the Face ID notch camera by doing a scan using a handheld scanner for 5 minutes of the face. So, if you want to do all of that, I guess you can fake it.
Jerry Hildenbrand for Android Central had a great comment on Twitter where he said, you know, if I can get enough photographs of your key, I can cut one and open your door.
One's enough, actually. And that's how the TSA key was leaked, was a close-up photo of the TSA key was enough to 3D print them.
There was actually a startup based on that. The idea that we can turn your keys into digital keys so that we can do whatever we can.
That's a good idea.
And pivot But the thing is that it was quickly pointed out that here are ways that if I just simply get access to your keys for 3 seconds, I can now essentially own everything. It's like no. Thank you. Nice appearance on Shark Tank, but no, this is not a good idea.
But somebody should release software for 3D printers or something, or a key cutter, that I could use a picture of a key instead of the key.
Can Glowforge do that? I mean, can you just laser cut yourself a bunch of keys?
Yeah.
Startup.
Well, they're already doing that. 3D printers are, it's we're already dealing with the problem of what if you can simply get a milling machine that will simply manufacture the part of a gun that makes a gun a gun, and then you can simply buy the parts legally to add onto it to turn it into something that can kill people. And this is a device, this is a machine that costs about $1,000, $1,500, and it's a, mostly it, it's about 90% a turnkey operation. 3D printing, thank God it's so difficult. Thank God it's so difficult to even spend $2,000 and get that demo vase to actually come out okay. If it were really as easy as we all hope it was going to be, the amount of fraud we could do with this, the idea of getting a picture from taking someone into a room, like an interrogation room, and simply there are four cameras that get the face from all four angles. It can print those sections of your face out of NinjaFlex or something, so it's translucent, heated up to 98.6 degrees, and get your phone open even though you thought you locked it. That's the premise for a very, very long and boring science fiction novel, but a scary one.
Here it is, key.me. Scan your keys and we'll make one.
A guy I know, actually, he was trying to replace the ductwork on his house, and they no longer made it. So he brought one piece in, scanned it,
3D printed
himself the rest of them.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. I like this. You can use their scanners. Scan your key. You don't have to, and they'll send you some new ones. Wow.
Yeah. See, I think that if you have a need for this service, that's when you go for a smart lock. It's because it'll give you everything you'd want to do with the smart, with this sort of key duplication service, with extra features that could somehow make your doors even more secure by allowing you to create temporary keys that only work for 3 hours. So it's
I mean, keys are obviously, you know, medieval technology. We can do better.
You see this so often. It's like when you see the Techmoan channel, is still one of my favorite YouTube channels, did a couple of different videos on when compact disc came out and the LP, like the vinyl record industry, tried to match. Well, if it's the digital sound quality you want, we have this new noise reduction technology. We have these records that are encoded with the CX or whatever DX technology, and you need to just plug this special box into your turntable, but you're still dealing with you don't understand that one of the clicks and the pops are only one reason why we don't like LPs anymore. One of them is that they are freaking huge and you have to flip them over and you can't just switch to one track to another. So I'm very happy for you. I'm glad the engineers that needed jobs got paid to create the standard for you. But if you're doing a more sophisticated way to make a copy of a key so you don't have to go to the True Value hardware store that's 6 miles up your road, okay, I'm glad you got funding for this, but maybe you haven't understood why we're upset with the key industry at this point.
So this may be a little bit more concerning. Familial resemblances may, however, be sufficient. This is a 10-year-old fifth grader, Amar Malik, who was able to unlock his mom's iPhone. Actually, if you look at the two of them together, that's not surprising. They look a lot alike. Without any addition.
The white paper tells you that under 13, there's problems with...
But it's registered to her. She's not under 13.
The geometry on his face is probably amorphous enough that it's doing a fuzzy match.
Well, and interestingly, she re-registered her face ID, and it stopped doing it for a while. What apparently made it possible was that as she used it and it trained in bad lighting and other conditions, it got more fuzzy.
Forgiving, yeah.
More forgiving, and so she was able to, he was able to unlock it again. I mean, if you look at the two of them, they look a lot alike. I guess his dad, it worked once with his dad. Look, he unlocked it.
Yeah.
So I like his gesture.
Yeah. Geez.
So just something to be aware of, you know. So Apple said, and I think it was misleading, that Touch ID, there's a 1 in 50,000 chance of a false positive of somebody having the same fingerprint as you, and it's 1 in 1,000,000 with Face ID. But that's not really true. If there's people
who
look like you,
yeah.
Yeah, 1 in 1,000,000 strangers. Yeah.
Yes.
The other thing is that if that one in 30,000 chance, I can't just think of the people who work in my office and think that, wow, I'd never noticed it, but Josh has a fingerprint that looks so much like mine that I bet that I can unlock his phone. But if you the third time in a month when someone says, "Hey, are you Josh?" I would think, you know, Josh has an iPhone 10. It's worth at least trying. So that's but I don't consider this a scandal. I think this is part of the education that we're anybody who uses Face ID is going to have to know. Like, again, if you hang out with a brother or sister and you don't really trust them, if they forge their names on checks, perhaps you don't want to. Perhaps you want to, you know, remember that trick where if you hit the /home button several times, it will disable Face ID and require require your PIN.
Do you think Apple is just done with any other of biometric for the time being? Like the next generation or two of iPhones will all be just Face ID, or is it possible they'll put Touch ID on the back of the phone? And
I think that they're going to be all in on Face ID. I think that they're going to phase it into every phone where they can get enough parts to make it work and where it won't be cost prohibitive. So I think that they really aren't a belt and suspenders type of company. I think they're the ones that they themselves would think that we believe in Face ID so much that we see no need for Touch ID. And if they thought that Face ID were as valuable as a PIN code, then they would even replace the PIN code with it.
Ooh, I wouldn't want them to do that.
It is. No, I'm saying that if they felt it were that secure,
yeah,
then I don't think that they would be the one company that would say, no, you don't need to have a passcode. It's so good.
Yeah.
Just one drop of blood every 48 hours onto the special sensor.
Yeah.
And that's all you need to identify yourself with.
I actually turned off the 6-digit passcode and turned on a longer passcode for more security. But people got mad at me, and I think maybe we talked about this last week. I turned off the requires attention feature, so I don't have to look at it to unlock it. I find that makes it unlock a little bit more easily. Is that really – somebody said, Apple put all this energy – it was a funny letter – into Face ID, and you turn off attention? What are you, nuts? Don't tell people to do that.
It's an accessibility feature. If you need or want a wider, a more flexible, wider range of unlock parameters, you can turn it off. If you're more worried about security, you don't want somebody just holding it up to your face if they get physical access.
I'm not too worried
phone.
About somebody holding it up to my face.
If they have physical access of your phone, there's a whole range of issues that you should concern yourself with.
Face. I'm not worried about that. I don't think that's an issue at all.
I mean, they had a United Arab.
I can't unlock it when I'm asleep, so...
Yeah, nobody else. Well, they had an airline had to land because a woman's husband fell asleep and she put his sleeping finger on Touch ID.
Right.
It unlocked.
Right.
And she found out all this stuff and they had to land. I mean, so biometrics, to Andy's point, it's a convenience. It's not a security.
And I think that Apple would be right in saying this is the best possible balance of convenience and security. It's secure enough is a phrase that Steve Gibson might use that, you know, for most people, this is more than Apple security. You can turn it off. You can have a long, strong passphrase to open
your phone.
You
can also turn it selectively. So you can have it if you're worried about your kids getting into your phone, you can turn it off for unlock and put in your passcode, but enable it for everything else inside the phone. Or if you don't care about unlock, but you care about iTunes or App Store purchases, you can turn it off for that. So you can go through all those little checkboxes and choose.
That actually is a nice feature. My bank, LastPass, I know 1Password will use Face ID just as they used to use Touch ID. And that's pretty nice. I think that's a very to log into your bank that way is great.
Yeah, that was the first time that I set up my bank for Face ID. Actually, the only difficulty is that that's my money, man.
Yeah,
I'm going to be secure, right? I'm spending 3 or 4 days like in another city where I'm totally screwed if I get cleaned out, and I kind of want a complicated process just to give myself self assurance.
Well, you can always turn on Face ID plus an authenticator code.
Yeah,
that's what I do. Two-factor is really fantastic.
What is really cool is on iPhone 10 with Face ID, Apple enables Face ID for autofill. So if you're in an app or you're in Safari, it will autofill. I learned it by accident. I went to read Johanna Stern's review of iPhone 10, and it gave me the Wall Street Journal challenge page. And then I looked at it. It did the little Face ID animation.
Nice.
It filled in my username and password and logged me in.
Nice.
I was like, wait, what?
How did it do that? Does that mean you have the username and password stored in the
keychain? In iCloud keychain. Yeah. Uh-huh. So I don't always use iCloud Keychain because I dislike that there's no master password. I don't want to ever give my phone to somebody and let them type something and then suddenly get my credit cards. But for sites like the Wall Street Journal, I really don't care if somebody has access to that once they have my phone. So that was just an iCloud Keychain. And the minute I looked at it, it said, oh, you're looking at me. You must want to see this webpage. Filled it in and just gave me that webpage. I didn't even know what was going on.
How can you selectively use the Keychain to remember passwords?
It asks you, do you want to remember this password in Keychain when you put it in the first time? So if I use LastPass or 1Password and I fill it in, it'll say, do you want to remember this? And I almost never do it.
I must have turned that off because I don't see that anymore. There's probably a way to turn that off, right?
But there's a bunch of low security sites that I'm really super fine.
Yeah, that's a perfect use. No. Yeah. I use this. I do the bad thing, which is use the same password over and over again for those sites, because who cares if somebody gets my Wall Street Journal password? But probably that would be a better. Yeah, that would be a better way to do it. I like that. It does look
like
that
passwords go away, which is like the magical thing about Face ID. And I hate using that word magical, but where it is significantly better than Touch ID is it really makes you think your password or passcode is gone and you no longer even have to think about it.
Yes.
And it will challenge you sometimes. But when it works as designed, you just pick up your phone.
It works.
Thing happens.
You're in. You have to swipe up, but you're in. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've gotten so used to it.
It just fills.
Right. I've gotten so used to swiping up now. That is it's such an easy one-handed gesture. It's a very natural thing to do. In fact, I find all the gestures on the 10 superior, frankly, to the home button on the 8 and predecessors.
I'm still trying to figure out app switching. I definitely understand the mechanism, but it seems
I love this.
Like frequently I was just using Twitter and I dipped into Chrome for a second, and I would expect if I simply swipe to the bottom, I'll get back into Twitter, but I will swipe and then keep swiping and I cannot find Twitter. I finally give up and just relaunch it from the launcher. So maybe I still have some stuff to learn.
The stack order changes. So if you're in one app and you swipe sideways, you'll go to the previous app. And if you swipe back, you'll go to the app you were at before you swiped. But if you wait, I think it's 3 seconds, or you do any interaction, then that becomes the active app and the other apps are stacked behind that. And that bit of logic, some people it makes sense to. I think it command tab makes sense to some people, but other people just want object permanency where they know that these apps are always right.
In this
and these
order.
Apps are always to the left.
Yeah.
Well, I've been finding that some apps just get lost. It's like I can't find them anywhere. And it's just this is an app that I was just using like a minute ago. I've never had that problem with the Android app switcher. So I don't know what the deal is. We are dealing with a new mechanism that replaces something I've been using for several years. So I can't testify to how much of it is just my brain versus the technology itself.
No, but that's I think an excellent point. While in general, I feel like the gestures are intuitive, easy to learn, and very easy to modify your brain. There probably are some pain points for people. You've found a pain point. So it's probably worth covering. There are maybe some issues here and there. My big issue is, and it's frustrating, with apps that don't yet understand the iPhone X and put controls in a difficult to reach or inaccessible place up by the notch. Or down in the bottom, or it's obscured.
Or they collide, like Instagram swiping out of a story is now the same as swiping to home.
Yeah, those things will, I'm sure, in time be fixed. But you're going to run into a few apps that just like are baffled by this new phone.
That's not just exclusive to the iPhone X too. A big change, especially to something that is productivity related, is going to be a major pain point. I do think that the changes made in iPhone 11 for the iPad for productivity are huge, and they're definitely a big step forward. But I still wish that the slide over worked the way it always did. Because I'm still because there oftentimes when I use slide over, it is because I've got a main task in front of me and I just want to check something with the Google app, or I just want to check a time on the Maps app or something like that, and I like the fact that I can simply swipe over and then swipe down and here's a scrolling list of all the apps that are installed, whereas I have to expose the file launcher and drag an icon from down there to over there, wait to make sure that it pops up in the way that I expect it to pop up, and then let go of it, which is not kind of it takes me out of my flow a little bit.
Yeah. There is.
Some people were so confused. Like, they just thought it was gone. They just thought that all the side-by-side apps were absolutely gone and they couldn't figure it out.
No, in fact, I didn't know. And when Megan told me that I could just swipe at the bottom, that is the best. Frankly, I'd far prefer that than force touch or anything. I mean, that's just a natural way. In fact, maybe it's natural for me because I use workspaces on the Macintosh and I do control arrow all the time. I make everything full screen and I just control arrow between the applications. So it just feels like a very natural
way. Or if you ever had WebOS, like they had that whole gesture area.
You love that WebOS.
I did. I thought it had so many
I didn't
many
use
really
it long enough
ideas.
To have it in my brain.
Yeah.
You keep trying to swipe on your LG TV. You like WebOS so much.
Well, no, I mean, like the BlackBerry Playbook did it too, but I think that's an even smaller user base than webOS was.
Mark Gurman says that in 2019, not next generation, but the 2019 iPhone will have some sort of, you know, notch style sensors on the back. That's really where they need to be for augmented reality. He says that instead of the Kinect stuff, and I use that the Microsoft Kinect for the notch, K-I-N-E-C-T, because it's roughly the same sensors. Instead of, and Apple did buy the company that made it for Microsoft, PrimeSense. But instead of that, they're going to use a time of flight sensor system, which is a 3D sensor system that maps the world based on how long it takes light to bounce off of stuff.
Which is what you want, I think, for a rear-facing AR.
Yeah. I know. And what is Tango? What does Google use with this project?
I think
Tango?
It's similar. I think is they're using similar.
There's kind of a standard way of doing it.
It's more of a Kinect sort of system. It has greater precision. It can do things like figure out absolute distances without having to have a scale associated with it. I wouldn't call it a limitation, but that's one of the missing features of Apple ARKit. Because I'm going to be moving into a new office soon, and it kind of made me realize that how cool it would be to just be able to like take measurements just by taking a picture of like my desk back in my existing office, and then be able to go into this new office and then just get a go or no go. Will it fit in that corner? Yep, here you go. It'll fit. So I think that Apple is still focusing on it just for let's call it recreational augmented reality and to enhance photography. And I think that the vision, the year 2000 vision of the future applications of it, that's next phase stuff. That might be, you have to wait until 2020.
According to Gurman, Apple's talking to the companies that make time of flight sensors like Infineon, Sony, ST Microelectronics, and Panasonic. I think one of our sponsors.
Infineon, I think it was Intel, right? They're working on one of those.
Interesting. One of our sponsors, which is this lighthouse behind us, has a time of flight sensor, I think from ST Microelectronics, as I remember, which is a Dutch company. But that's kind of a cool technology. It's like LiDAR, it's not 360.
And Apple uses it already. Like the unlock with Apple Watch uses time of flight to make sure no one's doing a replay attack halfway between you.
You're kidding.
And your computer in another room. No, they measure the time of flight for the signal from your watch.
Whoa.
So that it can't be. So if someone's sitting in between you and the watch with a Bluetooth retransmitter, they can't grab the signal off your watch, pass it over to your computer.
Whoa, I did not know that. That is awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool tech in that.
Talk
stuff.
About over-engineered. That's amazing. You know, cars should do that because that's a real problem with the transmitters unlocking cars that have the push button keys. That's a smart move.
It's a smart group.
They know what they're doing. Yeah, you know what's great is if you get a bunch of really good engineers, you pay them fantastically well, and then you say, you know, come up with some stuff.
That's funny because you can just picture Craig walking through the hallway and the engineer's going, okay, send the picture to his phone. We'll see if we can get it.
Actually, the new tax bill, the one the Senate's looking at, will eliminate or at least make it very difficult for companies to bonus people like that with stock options because they will be taxed on their stock options as soon as they vest, instead of as soon as they sell, which is the current law. And that a lot of people are very worried that that's going to make it very hard to hire good people in Silicon
Valley.
Unless
they invested in real estate or golf courses, is my understanding.
if you're in golf courses, you're in great shape.
You're golden.
You're golden. You can deduct everything.
Everyone's going to get bonuses and golf course timeshares.
Let's take a break. We're going to have more. We got lots to talk about, and we've got some great people here to do it. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Andy Inoko from the Chicago Sun Times. I want to play with the Apple Clips app in a second.
Oh, fun.
That's fun, isn't it? Oh, man. That's impressive. They replaced – I'm glad they – you know, they were smart in the timing because they came out 1 week after the 10 so that people could use Animoji for a week and then stop. Just stop it. Now everybody's in the Millennium Falcons. Yeah, stop it. And then next week they can do something else. Our show today brought to you, we got a brand new sponsor, but something I've been using now in our bedroom for a couple of months and love. It's a air purifier, but it is a state-of-the-art, way beyond anything that you've ever used before. I've tried them all. You know, allergy. We live in the country. There's a lot of pollen. There's dust in the air. There's allergies. A couple of weeks ago, we had a lot of fire smoke in the air. But HEPA filters, which is what most of these are, don't really do a very good job. They can filter out large particles. But the problem is a lot of the stuff that you don't want to breathe are very tiny volatile organic compounds. The stuff from like paint drying that really are bad for you. And they pass right through because the molecules are so small in HEPA filters. So aptly named, here comes Molecule, patented technology that I can testify really works. Lisa used to wake up every morning congested with a headache from the pollen on the hillside. As soon as we put the molecule in the bedroom, she says, I haven't had a headache since. And I accidentally turned off the molecule a couple of days ago. And she said, did you do something? Because she got a headache. I said, well, yeah, I turned it off. This replaces 50 years of antiquated air purification technology. The HEPA filter was invented in the 40s. And that's what most people are still using. Molecule uses PECO, photoelectrochemical oxidation, that captures and eliminates tiny molecules like allergens. By the way, like you worried about black mold? HEPA filter won't stop it, but the molecule will. Bacteria, viruses, VOCs in the air, pollutants 1,000 times smaller than a HEPA filter. They've got a catalytic membrane in there, filter plus a catalytic membrane in there that the tiny molecules adhere to, and then they have a light in it, which is really cool because you can see a blue light coming off of it, that oxidizes them and makes them disappear. If you've got asthma, allergies, symptoms of any kind, you're going to be able to breathe through your nose for the first time in years. I'm telling you. Funded by the EPA initially, third-party tested, University of South Florida's Center for Biological Defense, University of Minnesota's Particle Calibration Laboratory. The guys who invented this are geniuses. And I love it because it ties to your phone and is completely controlled by your smartphone. Molecule. It's also beautiful, really gorgeous design. It does have a handle on it, so it's easy to move around. And one of the cool things about the Molecule app, it's monitoring your molecule. It knows when you need new filters and will automatically send you filters when you need them. Here, well, look, this is my molecule. I'm connecting to my device. You can connect over the internet. So even though the molecule's at home, you can turn it off. You can silence it. You can boost it. You can see here that my pre-filter has 78% depleted. My nano filter, that's the one that gets the tiny molecules, 93%. They will automatically send me a new filter when it's done. Now, there's a little problem with the phone and I should tell you ahead of time that the app will see 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi, but the molecule can't use it. So it will pair to the Wi-Fi and then your app won't talk. You could still control the molecule from the top of it, everything it can do. So my suggestion is pair it to your 2.4 gigahertz network, not your 5 gigahertz network. Once I figured that out, and I did, it worked fine. You'll see a lot of reviews of the app in the App Store saying that. So people were having problems. That's what that was. You got to pair to 2.4. The next generation of molecules, once they start the second generation of manufacture, that'll be fixed. Nevertheless, I just wanted to let you know about it. Once you pair it to a 2.4 gigahertz network, it's fantastic. You can turn it on or off. You can have schedules for the light because the light is what oxidizes those micro molecules. And so you might want to have the light go off at night. We do because we don't like a light in the bedroom. So you can have that. You could say, you know, don't do that oxidation thing in the middle of the night. You tell it how big the space is. It really is amazing. This thing is incredible. I want you to check it out. They told me they're going to give you your first year of filters free, which is really nice, and $75 off your first order. But go to Molecule, MOLECULE.com. Read up on this amazing technology. And if you have kids with asthma, if you have allergies, if there is stuff in the inside air is, if you have a sick house or a sick office, a lot of offices, you can't open the window. You need a molecule. MOLECULE.com. And the offer code is MacBreak. I told these guys at Molecule, I said, I think you've got the right podcast because these people are technical. They will understand the difference and why it's worth it to get a molecule. I'll tell you, I want to get one for the studio, John, because this we have all sorts of chemicals. I'm sorry, guys. We have chemicals floating through the air in here. I really want to clean it up. Molecule.
California.
Yeah, it is. It is fantastic. Somebody says, oh, you mean it's collecting data about my emissions and sending them back to the- no, it's not. And you can turn that feature off if you want to. If you don't want to use the phone and have it automatically send you filters because you have a lot of you eat a lot of burritos, you can turn that off and just do it manually. You don't have to do that. You can operate it just like a regular.
Oh, so asparagus again, really?
I happen to like that feature. Okay, I'm just.
Oh,
saying.
Really? Hello. You can ask the device. Did the dog do that?
That's the next generation. all right, let's talk about clips. This is really cool. So this is, I hope, you know, Apple obviously wants to release apps that are going to use the new Face ID notch cameras. And I hope that that Snapchat will update and lots of others. But this Clips app has been updated, and you're only going to be able to take advantage of this if you have an iPhone 10. The Clips app to me was kind of, you know, it's a little video editor. You can add stuff. The only cool thing that it did originally was live subtitles on there. But now with these scenes, it makes me want to do all sorts of videos. So let me show you here. I have to use my iPhone 10, so I apologize for the small camera. But a couple of things you immediately see. First of all, I am now in Hong Kong. It knows about my microphone. I don't know why. I think it's probably...
That one looks like Blade Runner to me.
Or yeah, it kind of is, isn't it? And I can't really show you because... So
it is 3D. It's totally 3D.
It's so wild. And you can rotate around but it also modifies what's really cool. And this is really more of a demonstration of how cool the A11 Bionic processor is. In real time, I'm now in the Millennium Falcon. It's interlacing and making me blue so I look like Princess Leia on the R2 unit.
There's a holo chessboard somewhere next to you.
You can, yes. Yeah, if I could turn it around. This is amazing. So this is the kind of rotoscoping that takes years to do in Hollywood. The A11's doing it in real time. As I talk, I'm in Paris, yeah. There's the Arc de Triomphe. You can't really see it because it's behind me. But I think this is really amazing. There's 8-bit. Here's the cherry blossoms. And by the way, you can apply these effects afterwards as well. You can change the effects, which I thought was really amazing. Anything to say or just, wow, everybody should get it.
What's really cool about this is when I first started hearing rumors about portrait lighting, I was trying to figure out what Apple would do. And for a while, Apple's been trying to take DSLR features. And while it can't reproduce everything that a real camera, a really big sensor, or a really good glass can do, they want to be able to give you at least emotionally some of those features. So portrait mode would give you the depth effect, the bokeh look, and you could get, you know, the blurred background that a lot of people liked in portrait photography. And now portrait lighting, which is still in beta, is trying to give you those lighting effects. So whether it's, you know, studio lighting or stage lighting, it wants to try to do what you would traditionally do in a studio with light boxes and bouncers and all these sorts of things. And I was trying to think what would be next. And one of the easiest things to contemplate was portrait backgrounds, where you'd either have the equivalent of a matte or a digital green screen effect that, you know, you take the kids for their school photos and they stand in front of a fake background or a green screen and they put in backgrounds, but doing that in real time. And they didn't wait till like iOS 12. They put that right into Clips and they did it with video. And there's some things in there, like they have also some filters like watercolor and I think graphite. And they're doing, they basically found images that had that effect and they machine learned them. They said, we want people to look like this painting. And then they did the usual machine learning, yes, no, yes, no, 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 yes, no, yes, no. And it learned in real time to study the scene and apply that sort of effect to it. So you're getting like this real-time machine learned processed video like apply to it. And it's really great for people like, I want to make a video log, but I have this crappy background behind me and I can't really build a studio. I go outside, it looks like garbage. Now you can do it from like a galactic background or something. And maybe you're in your washroom because it's quiet in there. You don't know. And you can make these really cool little videos.
We've seen these before. I mean, every camera, you know, when you get a webcam does something like this and it's not perfect, you know, it's not perfect keying. But it's pretty amazing. And this is another thing I found out. By the way, somebody was asking, can you do it in landscape mode? Yeah, it works in landscape mode. If you cover the Face ID, you disappear. So you can make yourself kind of slowly appear. If you had netting or something, you could have some fun with that. This is obviously a technology demonstration, kind of a show off, but I love it. I mean, I think this really shows you there's a lot more that this is capable of. And I look forward to third parties taking advantage of this.
The biggest problem they have is that they don't Apple still looks at Clips like an app. It's software that they update. I mean, they did Clips 1.0 last year, then 1.2, then 2.0. So you got these effects, but you're going to have these effects. Everyone will use them for a week and then they'll be like, okay, I've used them. Where Snapchat and Instagram are changing live effects, they treat it like a service and it's updated every week, if not every day.
That's what we need.
I got cat ears today. I got dog ears tomorrow, but it's different. And Clips still isn't at the speed of an internet service, I don't think.
Well, it's also, you mentioned Snapchat. This is a sort of stuff that's a wonderful ambassador. It's a wonderful promotional thing just for the iPhone in general, or the iPhone 10, where people, how many times have I downloaded a new photo app because I suddenly see people posting awesome pictures in Instagram.
Exactly.
And so people will say, wow, how did you turn yourself into a cartoon on the surface of the moon? Say, oh, well, that's an app on my iPhone 10. Wow, is that work on my iPhone 6? Like, no, you need the iPhone 10. Okay, I need the iPhone 10.
And the other thing I found out just today on iOS today, the HEIF, the high efficiency image format that the iPhone 8 and 10 are using, stores so much information that you can retroactively change portrait mode and stuff on not even on the iPhone 8 or iPhone 10, on any, this is my iPad. And you see, with something that was shot with portrait mode, I still have access to all the portrait mode features because Heif, or what do you call, how do you pronounce it?
Yeah, hi, Heif. Yeah,
Heif. No, so saves all that information.
Apple is sort of cheats with the JPEG. If you still use JPEG, they'll put the portrait mode, the depth data, into the JPEG header. But what you can do with Heif is that you get exactly what you're showing there. You can do all the lighting effects, and you get the live photos is editable, so you can do those bounce effects and the loop effects and the slow shutter effects.
Because it's all there. They're saving the raw data. Bundle. Plus modifications. That's pretty incredible, right?
I wonder why they don't do that on every single photo, whether you've got it enabled or not. My understanding is that that's true if you've enabled portrait mode, but if you haven't enabled portrait mode, then it will just simply take a regular shot as usual.
Oh, interesting.
It's slow. It's like old HDR. The compute is so intensive that it doesn't want to do it unless you ask for it.
But even if it doesn't do the compute, like even if you just simply said it's not going to do the compute, it's simply going to collect like a raw. It's going to collect all the information you would need so that later on another iOS device, you can decide, well, what would that have looked like in portrait lighting, or what would that look like with a different background?
So is it collecting all that information even if you're not in portrait mode?
Not yet.
It's using the information. It's just not. Because whether you've got portrait mode on or not, it's using depth sensors to at least inform it on what the exposure should be.
It could store that in the Heif image.
Yeah,
I guess.
I want to make sure I say I'm speaking out of ignorance here. When I say I don't know why they don't do that, I'm not saying they should. I'm saying that I don't know why they don't do that. And I imagine there must be either with Apple, if they didn't do something, there's either a really strong technical reason why, or B, they just didn't have the time, or they didn't have enough staff to make that happen, and it's on a whiteboard somewhere.
Although,
my understanding is that it's purely technical. It's the same way that HDR used to be an option because it would need to take those three photos and it would be like half a second longer. And now it's just HDR is always on because the processors are so fast that it's invisible. Right. To capture all that depth data still take, like, you take a chunk instead of just being da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's just a little bit longer than what they want.
That's one of the few steps backward I think that Apple made with this new release. That it's not that HDR is always on. It's that auto HDR is always on. So that whereas before, if you took a picture and you realized that, wow, it really blew. I don't know why it really blew out the highlights on that. You could then go in and turn on HDR on, not auto, but on. And it would definitely try to do HDR. You have to go back into camera settings and flip a switch to turn it from automatic to back to like a regular turn on, turn off feature. That's the one consistent time situation in which the iPhone 10 and the iPhone 8 have been taking bad pictures are, again, instances which I was really super surprised it didn't decide to HDR something, and wasn't even a, to me, it wasn't even a close call. It was, no, you obviously, you've got a white wall behind you where the sunlight is coming in. You've got a foreground that's nothing but shadow. This should not be a big wall of white pixels behind that. There should be some detail there.
You've done this, I think. Mashable took the images from every iPhone. Here's Lance Ulanoff in going all the way back to the 3G to the 10 and showed how these images have changed. But the real problem, and a number of people on Twitter have pointed this out, is the selfie camera is too accurate. It unless you're a movie star or Kim Kardashian, this guy GQ Geo has said you need a whole facial and moisturizing routine along with a spa day before you take a photo on that iPhone 10. It is.
Just put Vaseline on the lens like the old
it's
days.
It's too good. It's too detailed. I don't like it.
Apple made a deal so they could actually call that video effect the Ken Burns effect. They should basically give some money to Kim Kardashian and say, make the Kardashian effect where, no, we know you don't look anything like this. We smoothed out every single blemish. We decided to make it to get the pores on your nose so that they don't get to, so that they're not quite so so easy to see. Yeah, people have a certain standard for selfie pictures that the back they want nothing but accuracy on the rear-facing camera that shoots landscapes. They want no accuracy whatsoever on the camera that shoots selfies.
So they need a machine-learned portrait mode that makes you look like Kim as much as possible with every selfie shot.
It's so funny because that's the biggest difference in the cameras. It's not the rear camera. It's the front-facing camera with selfies.
Yeah, it's 7
too
megapixels
damn
now.
Accurate.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I have cameras with better... you know, selfie cams, and I never had this problem. They're just too good. So I'm going to start bringing a little jar of Vaseline around with me.
Yes. Just Vaseline up that lens.
Smudge the lens a little bit. It's terrible. It's terrible.
Oh, darling, I'm ready for my selfie now.
And by the way, it's
the Sybil Shepherd, the moonlighting effect for some.
I do, yes. She was always in some blurry thing. By the way, it's only going to get better. Apple has acquired, on Thursday, TechCrunch reported, a sensor startup called Invisage Technologies, which specializes in making small sensors do a better job.
Yeah.
So it's going to get even better. Oh, yeah,
that's where it's all headed. If you're worried about how the selfie cam works, that's something that can now change in software. If you're worried, if there used to be limitations you absolutely could not get around because of the limitations of the lens and limitations of the sensor. Now it's like if there's any characteristic that you don't like about how this camera performs, there's a good chance you can mitigate it with software and with the computing power that's inside the iPhone or pretty much any other premium smartphone, really, that you can make photons bend to your will as opposed to bend to the laws of physics.
You are Green Lantern.
Invisage's technology is called quantum film. And it's actually, get this, a photosensitive layer that goes on the lens. This is from their own website. That relies on their newly invented class of materials to absorb light. It's quantum dots, nanoparticles that can be dispersed to form a grid once they're synthesized. Just like paint, this dispersion of solid materials can be coated onto a substrate, allowed to dry. This is on your lens, and then it improves light sensitivity, and it gives you better results in low light, and it gives a sensor, even an inadequate sensor, more detail.
Well, it has the word quantum in there.
It's got to be good.
So I believe it.
It's got to be.
But does it have a spore drive? Does it have a spore drive, Leah?
it's wild. I mean, we're living in interesting times. That's all I can say. Yes. And I love it that there's a company that's so freaking rich. Yeah. Hey, you know what? Don't pay those taxes, Apple. You're using all that money better anyway.
Cool
keep buying cool technology. They're so freaking rich that they could just push the envelope so far in this computational photography and a lot of other things. I do feel like having looked at the images now on the Pixel versus the iPhone, and I see some of this in what they're showing on the Mashable page, that the newer iPhone kind of tilts things in a little bit it's doing stuff. It's not exactly accurate. You know what I'm saying? Would you agree, Renee, when you look at the images coming out of the iPhone 10, they're better, they're more pleasing.
Yeah, so they have a philosophical thing where, like, they never wanted to give you, because, like, the showroom feel. Like, some companies want to crush the blacks and boost the sat and give you, like, a really mainstream appealing photo. And Apple never wanted that, but they didn't want to do a harsh reality either. They always, their goal, and they shoot, like, they have a team, like, I think 200-some people now, and they shoot edge case photos all day. They wanted to give you what you felt you were looking at was their goal. It's like a natural sort of a photo that matched your expectation when you took it. And that's a really weird target to aim for, and it's sort of, it's not oversaturated or boosted, but it's not as grim as it could be if it was trying to do a one-to-one tone mapping.
Yeah. In fact, kind of sometimes the Pixel photos do look a little kind of desaturated and grim. Here, this, though, you can see Apple actually doing this. This is a close-up of the Mashable shots. The one on the far left is the oldest. It's the original, yeah, iPhone. And that may be the more natural color. You see how warm it suddenly got in the 3GS. And then Apple said, yeah, no. Let's back that off. So that was a big change, right? And then you can see them, now they've kind of settled on color balance because it doesn't change so much. It's detail now that's getting better and better. And you can see it mostly in like the lighted, probably the best places to look is the lighted windows in the building in the foreground. As you can see more and more detail through those windows. It's interesting.
And it's all compromised. Like when you're talking to some of the photo engineers, there are things they could do. And we've seen like HTC especially has been really good at experimenting with this stuff. If you drop the aperture, you gain this light, but you also get this distortion. If you boost this other parameter, right, you might get this, but you also get that. And I think both Apple and Samsung and Google, even with the Pixel, they've made the best compromises. Like they have a good aperture. It's not the most you could go to, but it avoids a lot of distortion. They have a really good, you know, like accuracy and megapixel range, but it's not so much that they're using tiny little pixels and chopping up the sensor too much.
Yeah.
So they're all making sort of intelligent choices now.
If you look at the detail in the brick on the 6S and then the 6 Plus, you know, by the time they got to the 7, especially the 7 Plus, they got the detail down. Now they're tweaking colors and things like that. It's very interesting to watch. Yeah. These are all 12 megapixels.
Textures is a big thing this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and the color of the sky feels more accurate. It's not it feels like that's either early morning or early evening, where you've got the sunrise or sunset sort of painting the Empire State Building there. That wouldn't be a piercingly blue sky. It would be sort of a faded blue sky.
Yeah, so, but look at, for instance, look at the spire on the world, how the color has changed. Maybe it's changing color actually. Maybe it's changing color. I don't know, because it's blue on the 10, and
that could be incidental due to what the processor is doing. There are two things that seem to hold true with almost every iPhone camera that I've tried. Number one is that it doesn't like. It will do whatever it can to not drop down, not increase the ISO rating, to not make the crank up the power to the image sensor to make it more light sensitive, which means that if there's a subject that's moving around really fast, it's not the iPhone. If you're testing three or four different phones, is not the one that's going to get a nice clear shot of that subject, because it doesn't want to. It would rather have a slow shutter speed and a low ISO than boost up the ISO to get a faster shutter speed. The other thing is that, and this has been more true of the past two or three iPhones, is that it doesn't seem to be very afraid of blown highlights. It seems as though, I don't know whether it's the way that Android phones process HDR, whether they're more adept at it. The way that I test phones is that if there's a HDR feature, I leave it on auto, so it will choose whatever it wants to do. But even when I have got HDR enabled on the iPhone, the number of blown highlights is usually a lot more noticeable.
Yes,
and sometimes, and that's hard to avoid in any camera, but I feel as though Apple, they have no fear of that. And where there's a blown highlight, it's a really noticeable blown highlight, where it's not, oh, look, there's a glint of light coming off of this surface. It's, no, here is a section of this digital photo in which there are no pixels whatsoever recorded. And that's a big problem, especially when you try to go into get an Instagram and slide. Yeah, as a matter of fact, when the 8 Plus photo, look at her forehead, the highlights of her forehead, those are blowouts. The 8 Plus on the iPhone 10, Those are blowouts there. And the 8 Plus, at least there's some image data there. You can see it's less problem on the 7 Plus, but on the 10, that to me is a I was going to say big problem. I think that it's more accurate to simply say that's really unfortunate, because that's something that your eye gets just drawn completely to that. And it's actually, for all I know, it looks like she's tilting her head a little further.
Maybe. Yeah, that's the problem. It's very hard to get apples to apples control, these kinds of things, control these.
But still, the iPhone X photo shows what I'm talking about. I don't expect to see that kind of blown highlights in Android pictures, whether it's using HDR or not.
It's really, and skin tones, the variation in skin tones over time and stuff. I think I would love to see somebody like DxOMark do this in a controlled way so that we can really look at it, because it's clear that Apple is constantly tweaking this. And I'm sure everybody is. I'm sure Google's doing the same thing with their Pixels and looking to get it more accurate. This is a piece that appeared on Halloween in Mashable. And at least you can look at it yourself and be the judge. Yeah. But I find that fascinating.
But once again, remember that we're the people that review these things.
Yeah, this is pixel peeping. This is exactly the kind of thing I was talking about.
And this is what we're being paid to do. We're being paid to notice these things. Yeah. However, it's the biggest difference between a camera, $1,000 camera phone and a $600 camera is that the person who uses the camera is expecting perfection every single time. They really are out to get the best picture possible. Whereas, and this is not a slight whatsoever towards the phone camera operator, they just want a snapshot. They want a picture of their mom holding their 2-year-old and their new infant grandchildren together. It doesn't really matter so much if there is a blown highlight on her forehead or if there is a little bit of noise in the background. It's just a snapshot. It'll go onto Instagram. Hundreds of people that they know and love will say, "Oh my God, that's so adorable!" And that's really what they're after. But it also mitigates the idea that if the color is a little bit off, if you thought the sky should be a little bit bluer, there is that step in Instagram or any other photo app before you put it someplace where if you want to make the sky a little bit bluer, great, make it bluer. If you'd want more detail, great, do that as well. So I like Apple's point of view, which is we're going to do a conservative conservative interpretation of the numbers we're getting off this image sensor. And if you want it to be more intense, by all means, go for it. But we're going to start you off with something that is probably going to make most people happy.
So the HEIF format is giving me raw material, right? I could see, that's one thing that a pro with an expensive camera is doing, is putting it in Lightroom or Photoshop or something, in Affinity or whatever, and tweaking it, doing the tweaking themselves that Apple does automatically now. But Apple is saving the raw image, right?
I don't know if it's saving it. It gives it, like, if you go to twitter.com/SDW, Sebastian DeWitt, who does Halide, I don't know how to pronounce it, Halide, that really good iOS camera app. He has an example of taking the image in Halide and then using the HDR features. The one underneath that, what dynamic range means. Yeah, there. Like, he takes the photo with the iPhone 10 and then pulls up.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
In Halide, the HDR qualities. And I don't know.
It's probably halide, because silver halide was the chemical used in early photography. Yeah. Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah, no, that's dynamic range is important. That's why if there's a blown highlight, on a regular camera, you don't worry about it quite so much, because, you know, there's probably detail in there that you can recover. But if you blow the exposure, again, if it's only recording white pixels, that's, you can't put that back in.
Once it's clipped.
You can't put in something that wasn't recorded.
Yeah. It's as in audio. Once you clip the audio, you can't recover it. Halide. Well, I'm gonna have to try this. Have you tried it? It's a camera.
It was gonna be the iPhone. But I can.
Oh,
I
no, can no, 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 no,
okay,
no.
I'll save it. Yeah.
Leo, could you call on me first for picks of the week?
Okay,
all right,
then go to Andy first.
No. Joking. I had something else to pick.
I haven't done a pick in ages. You guys always take all the good stuff. We're going to take a break. Come back with more. Andy Iannacco, Renee Ritchie. Yes, our picks are around the corner. More Apple news. I got to find a Mac story. I promised you a Mac story. I'll find a Mac story for you. But first, a word from Rocket Mortgage. If you are buying a new home, if you are refinancing, you know what that involves. Going to a bank, a lender, saying, "Please, sir, may I have some money?" And, you know, you put up the house for collateral. That process hasn't changed much in 100 years, unless you go to Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans, the best lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction, 7 years running, according to J.D. Power. You can trust them. They are really a great company, one of the biggest lenders in the country, but the best. And especially for us geeks, because they have made a they have reinvented the home loan process. They brought it into the 21st century. It's a client-focused technological revolution. First of all, it's convenient. It's easy because you can do it on your phone, your tablet, your computer. You apply simply. It's easy because you don't have to go to the attic and go through boxes of paperwork. You don't have to call the bank and say, can I have my bank statements? You don't have to give them anything except the basic information. They have trusted partners with all the financial institutions. So all you do is press a button and it's sharing your information with them. You'll understand every step of the way what's going on, because after they crunch the numbers based on your income, assets, and credits, they'll show you exactly what they did and which loans are right for you. And then you choose your down payment, your term, your rate. You can mortgage with confidence. It's Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. And it's so fast that you could actually do it at an open house. You could go visit a house, say, we want this house. And before you leave, show the realtor we're approved for a loan with Rocket Mortgage. That's pretty important, because I have to tell you, it's buying a house now. It's a little competitive. It's a seller's market. And the person who is approved is going to win out over you if you're not. So bookmark this, will you? RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak so that you can be loaded and ready. They even have a button at the end. I love it. Press this button to download the letter of approval that you can print out and show your realtor. If your realtor is one of those old school types from the 19th century that wants to see a printed letter, I love it. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. Oh dear, downtown Brooklyn, Apple Store, big plate of glass. You know, Steve always loved that glass. Broke. And it's delayed. Look at this store. This is the Brooklyn, downtown Brooklyn Apple Store. And whoops. Oh boy. This is actually, I was told by somebody who was on site, a problem with the spaceship campus is that those giant panes of glass could break, and when they did, it was a massive task to recast them, and very expensive.
Boston's John Hancock Tower had the exact same problem.
Yep.
10,000 windows that were popping out of a 90-story building.
Yeah, that's not good.
And every single one of them had to be replaced.
That reminds me, next time I'm in the John Hancock building, not to walk on that clear glass floor that they have so you can look down at where you're 90 stories up. That's not good. Not good. And then I guess they're remodeling the Australian Apple store because thieves robbed the Apple Regent Street store in the UK. The Apple Chadstone location. I don't know if they're related. It's going to be one of them Genius Grove things, kind of like we have here in San Francisco.
Yeah. I think they might want to – Apple has to kind of rethink the balance between security and style, because they yeah. Like you said,
they're wide open.
They love having those big glass walls, but the problem is that given that there's not a police officer 10 seconds away – These criminals are just saying, if we just simply ram a car through the front of this, we've got a good 3.5 minutes, 4 minutes to put $50,000 worth of stuff into the back of that car, pull out and make a getaway. It's hard to defeat that kind of a smash and grab. And this is the reason why this is why Cartier does not have big, huge floor to ceiling glass walls. They like to have big, thick walls that keep the riffraff and the highwaymen out.
This is kind of wild. 10 thieves on mopeds. And there's a video, but it's not playing now. I don't know what I did to screw it up. But you can watch the video on the Evening Standard, which is not responding. Thank you, Evening Standard.
I misread it. I don't condone thievery, but I thought that I saw a moped. I misread like scooter. And if I thought that, oh, it's like a band of mods, like in
Quadrafeet, like it's Carnaby like Street, Street.
With those scooters with all the mirrors on them. That I wouldn't approve of it, but I would be a little bit more okay with it if we got video of like the Who circa 1965.
The kids are all right, and now they're loaded with mini Macs. And iPods and iPhones and all that jazz. Oh, man. Not only has it stopped responding, but I've lost control of my Windows machine. Jeez. There you go. Thank you, Windows.
Press the home button. Just press the home button.
Yeah, I wish I could. Close window. Can I get out of it? I think it's crashed.
Oh, itch. Little tip for iPhone 10 people. Some people have gotten, once in a while, the phone, like you think the phone is frozen. And most of the time you can just swipe up, and the swipe up gesture will overcome the freeze. But some people, I think Casey Neistat had this problem. They really feel like they're locked into that phone. You can just ask Siri to switch apps for you. Like you can say, Yo Doodad. Open mail, and it'll switch to another app, and then you'll be able to easily get out without having to reboot.
So is that temperature related?
No, it shouldn't. I mean, like any process can crash, and if the app process crashes, it's not a problem because the gestures are system based. But if something locks up the entire system, in the old days, you'd be able to, you know, maybe the home button would force it, or maybe you could do that memory flash trick where you'd hold down one button and then the other to just free all memory. But with this one, like if you feel like the gestures have locked you out, and sometimes it's just not like the gesture that you're in landscape and you turn it back and the gesture stays landscape and you don't see it.
Right.
But if you ever think that you're locked, just ask it to change to an app you know. And then you'll be reoriented.
I love that. And can I just press the home, the on off button to do that? Or do I have to?
You can hold it down for Siri. Yeah.
I love, by the way, that is a great feature. I'm now a big fan of that. That was the old home button you'd press, but you just press the on off switch and Siri will listen to you. And that seems somehow more natural to me. I guess because I'm holding the phone, I already have my finger on that button or something. So I could say switch to mail and it would just fix that.
It'll go to mail and then you don't have to worry about being locked out.
So what is the Apple says they've identified an issue where the display becomes unresponsive to touches after a rapid change.
I tested this so much, Leo. I was out in really cold Montreal weather for so many days and I couldn't reproduce it because I would go for walks where I would go outside and then use my phone for 30 minutes until I thought my fingers would fall off.
And you never could reproduce it.
Yeah, and I couldn't reproduce it. And then one day I finally could. I got out of a warm car into a freezing cold night, and for about 5 or 6 seconds, I couldn't hit the keyboard.
That's
and then it.
It
started working again.
Okay.
So my understanding is that this is an issue with the algorithm that does the touch detection because it's doing a lot of stuff. It's doing false detection. It's trying to determine that it's actual skin and fingers hitting it, not your palm or some other object, and that it's getting disoriented when the temperature changes rapidly in a very short period – or drops, sorry, rapidly. And they're going to push an update to that algorithm, which will do better sorting.
So it's not a hardware problem. It's something they're going to fix in software. Nice.
And now I can stay inside with gloves on and not have to worry about it so much anymore.
If you're a Johnny Ive fan, you want to know more about Apple Park. We have a couple of visitors in studio today who are all excited. They came down from Seattle to see LCD Sound System, and they were going to go down tomorrow and look at the Apple campus, and they found out they're going home Thursday. They found out that Friday the Apple Visitor Center is opening. So now, if you go to the Apple campus, if you just drive up to it, we have somebody who lives in Cupertino. He said, you can't see it. There's berms all around it. You have to. But once they open the visitor center, you were there, Renee. The visitor center is inside the fences, inside the berms.
Yeah, it's right immediately after when you turn into the entrance way.
So you'll get a better. You'll if you were able to go there, you'd be able to see the spaceship at a distance.
Yeah, there's a coffee shop and an Apple store, Apple Park, and then you can go up to a sort of like an observation deck that gives you a better view of the Ring campus.
Sorry, Chris and Ryan. You got to come back. At least you're going to see LCD Sound System. Yeah, that's good. Big article and interview, rare interview with Johnny Ive in Wallpaper, which is a design lifestyle magazine. In the Loop, Johnny Ive on Apple's new HQ and the amazing disappearing iPhone. Featuring pictures and two. Does the iPhone disappear? Because if it does, I owe Robert Scoble lunch in Paris.
No,
it doesn't disappear, right? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to read the whole thing. Any amazing insights in here? Or the building,
it's just very Johnny Ive,
will evolve. Yeah. Actually, I'm more interested in being able to see the landscape.
It's the device stuff that he's talking about. Like he said, like he has the iPhone, but he's become so much a screen that more than ever, the software is what defines the experience. And he expects that new, and I don't know how much of this is just Johnny being Johnny and how much is actual forward-looking software statements. But he's saying that you buy an iPhone 10, within a year, it's going to be a different experience because the software is going to be continuously updated, which will provide you with new features that change the way the hardware feels. And I think that is a lot of Johnny being Johnny,
yeah.
But it does show that when you have a full screen, anything that changes what's shown on that screen just feels very substantive.
He says, as a design team, our goal has always been to get design out of the way. What I think is remarkable about the iPhone 10 is that its functionality is so determined by software. Because of the fluid nature of software, this product is going to change and evolve. In 12 months' time, this object will be able to do things that it can't now. I think that's extraordinary. I think we'll look back on it and see it as a very significant point in the terms of the products we've been developing. You could say the same thing about the camera, right? The photography, as we get to computational photography, the same hardware can do new and amazing things that it couldn't do before. So while I'm completely seduced by the coherence and simplicity and how easy it is to comprehend something like the first iPod, I am quite honestly more fascinated and intrigued by an object that changes its function profoundly and evolves. This is rare. That didn't happen 50 years ago. From a designer's point of view, I guess that makes sense. If you're used to designing physical objects, now that the iPhone is basically just getting closer and closer to a pure slab of glass, yeah. It also explains why the headphone jack goes away and eventually, I'm sure, the lightning port and buttons. It's all software.
Yeah. There's something to be said, though, for designing something that isn't going to be vague and it's not going to be abstract. I've makes a great point. It's one of the most transformative things about phones. It wasn't so much the simple idea of multi-touch. It's the idea of there is not a keyboard on the screen. There's not a keyboard on the phone until you need for there to be a keyboard. There is not a camera shutter button until you need for there to be a camera shutter button. And so this thing can be completely amorphous. It's silly putty. If you need a movie screen, then nothing is on that display except for the movie. However, there's a familiarity to a tactile interface that I think you can drive that car completely off the cliff by saying that we don't need a clicky button of any kind. We don't need a headphone jack of any kind. We don't need volume buttons. That means that as I saw with the latest MacBook, when you have to reveal a volume button in order to change the volume, that's a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
One of the few things that I really miss between the iPhone 7 and 8 and the iPhone 10 is I was using that camera shortcut. I love camera shortcuts. I love it when you, like on my Android phone, where I just double tap the power button and it will just simply take me right to the camera. There's some shortcuts that you kind of miss when you don't have a clicky button, when you have to wait for the phone to wake up enough to present you with an interface. When you have clicky buttons, you can have the clicky button do stuff before the camera, before the phone is even a phone, before it's really fully woken up. So I love what he's saying, that it's possible that you can buy a device today that in 2 years, 2 or 3 years from now, doesn't just run apps that haven't been invented yet, but does tasks that haven't been invented yet. Just like we used to travel with a CD player and a phone and a camera. Now imagine buying the CD player and actually 2 years from now there's a software update and now it takes pictures. That's the kind of mind-blowing sort of stuff we're looking at with modern phones.
Yeah. He says, if you think of what multi-touch afforded, on the one hand, it was so powerfully intuitive because you could directly manipulate content. But, and this is what you were talking about, Andy, because it wasn't affected by physical buttons, you could create an interface that was very specific to an application. That's why the App Store could be. And you could have such an extraordinary range of applications and user interfaces. And it does have that double-edged sword, Andy, because it's one of the problems I have with the iPhone is that it's not – every app has a different UI, and it's not always obvious what to do next. On the other hand, it's a very fertile area to develop in. And it's also what gives you, the weird –
But you get a Snapchat, right? And no one knows how to use it.
Well, that's right. Or you get the control panel where – eventually everything will be a on-screen range of very confusing buttons. So the trick is, as a software designer, not to do the control panel, But to come up with a way that's natural and intuitive without being just a bunch of on-screen analogs.
What's super fascinating is like the same people who build all these iPhones, and you know, and it's not just Apple. I mean, HTC is trying to make squeeze sides, so you don't have to have side buttons because you all want to get away from mechanical failure.
Actually, but, you know, I love the squeeze on the Pixel XL. I think you will too. That actually is intuitive and natural. I was skeptical, but it does work.
These are the same designers who will unbox a Leica camera with every one of his like little gadgety buttons.
And
on.
Love it.
Wanton abandon. Yeah, right. Absolute tactile abandon. Actually, they're making a phone that oblivious all buttons.
Excellent analogy, because I far prefer my cameras where the things I do the most are physical knobs to an on-screen menu. But that's because the camera is all about physical manipulation. Yeah. It's all about whipping a thing up, getting it right, and taking a picture quickly. And there's no way that can happen on screen.
Yeah. My eight-year-old godson demanded for his brother, but really wanted for his birthday a typewriter, a good old-fashioned typewriter. And he's still every day he sits
weirdo.
There, just tick 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 tick, ding.
He got it.
Tick, 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 tick. Yeah, Georgia went and got it for him, and he just sits there delighted, like this glowing look on his face, putting the paper in, turning it, tapping on the keyboard, ding, and going back. And he has access to MacBooks and iPads and all this stuff because she has everything he could possibly want, and what he wanted was a typewriter.
Yeah. So long as designers don't keep focusing on what their customer actually wants, what they actually need, instead of forcing them into what they want, what's useful for the company for them to buy. I got a great deal on a camera that I've been searching for a while. This is the Olympus OM2N. And the thing is, the trend for modern cameras is to make cameras that look exactly like this camera that was made in like 1984, 1985. Because as you said, for people who want to spend $1,000 on a camera, they want knobs, they want controls. And it's not nostalgia. It's because that's how you take pictures with a really good camera. If you notice, Apple, of course, they got rid of the you don't see a headphone jack on the iPhone X, but one thing you do see is you still see a mechanical button for silencing the ringer. That's because at some point when you want to get the phone to shut the hell up, you don't want to have to wake it. You don't want to have to face undead. You don't want to have to go to some sort of other panel. You want to take a switch you just want to flip a switch and suddenly get the damn thing to shut up. I wonder how long it's going to be before they finally decide to get rid of this switch. I really think that it's going to be the last thing to go, because on a phone, that is the desperate please, 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 before anybody in this concert hall realizes it's me who's making this noise with a phone, shut the hell up.
Well, and it's not just that, because without turning on the phone, you have a physical readout of the state of your phone. You can see a physical thing. And it's the same thing on that camera. I can look down and say, oh, yeah, I'm set at F2. I mean, those things, that's interesting. Yeah, it's information. So there is a good excuse for a physical interface in some cases. You don't want to design them all. You don't want this to be a slab of glass.
Until we get our implants, Leo. Then
most phones, Andy, have taken away that physical silence switch. It's one of the things I love about the iPhone. That I miss on other phones.
And I still miss the rotation locks switch on the iPad, because it's kind of the same sort of thing. I can be like on the sofa and suddenly if I'm reading a book, I've gone from like 28 minutes of reading it, I'm sitting straight up, to another 10 minutes of sort of lying on my side, or just I'm sort of slumped a little bit, just enough to get it to rotate.
Yeah, me too.
And it's so, and I just I want to flip that switch and say, for the next 20 minutes, please don't rotate the screen. It's not that much more work to simply reveal it in Control Center, but it's like you gave me a switch. I like the switch. I told you how much I like the switch. Then you took the switch away. I don't know why you did that.
I filed a radar yesterday for smart orientation lock, because I want my orientation locked. But if I go to any media that's landscape, it should, like Netflix, it just overrides it. It goes, no, you're watching a movie now. We don't care about that. But also, like in Andy's point, if I'm reading a book, I want orientation lock on. But if I turn my iPad sideways, let me just grab the screen and twist my hand and put the book in the orientation. I want it. Like all this stuff. It's like I had an alarm go off, my wake-up alarm. It's not a normal alarm. It's the alarm you set in the alarm app in the bedtime mode. So all that alarm does is wake you up. And I was on the phone and it went up and it went off. And I don't know why it doesn't know that if you're on the phone, chances are I'm awake and it doesn't need to hit me with that alarm. There's like all these little behavioral things I think could be better at.
Here is the final quote in the article. This is a Wallpaper magazine. By the way, the cover of Wallpaper, special cover designed by Johnny Ive. You know what it is? It's just white. It's just a white cover.
But he picked each one of those letter colors, Leo, in a month with each color.
That's Johnny in a nutshell.
That's the literal version of, no, this design is so genius that only really smart designers can appreciate how genius it is.
I think he was trolling them. You think he was trolling them?
You know what? That physical copy is going to sell out, I promise you. Here's the final quote, which I think is very...
It's a sketch cover. You take it to the con and have other designers write their own design on it for $20.
It's the whitest. There's none whiter. It's as white can be. The final quote I like. When I look back over the past 25 years, in some ways, what seems most precious is not what we have made, but how we have made it and what we have learned as a consequence of that. I always think there are two products at the end of a program. There's the physical product or service, the thing you've managed to make, and then there's all that you have learned. The power of what you have learned enables you to do the next thing, and it enables you to do the next thing better. And that's where the continuity of Johnny and his design team really makes a difference. He's been at Apple, you know, longer than anybody at this point, right? He started, what was his first design at Apple? Was it the iMac? The color iMac?
His first was Steve, but he had his designs turned down for years before Steve showed.
But he's been there 20 some years. Yeah. And so that the thing is, he is learning with every product. And so many companies, you know, there's churn with the design team. There's churn with a lot of the teams. That's really an important quote. I thought it was
one of the most amazing things I think about him is that he, when you hear him speak, he actually sat like that when he's on those white screens, there's no artifice. That's the way Johnny actually talks and speaks. And I've heard him say things like, you know, we've done this keynote and we've created this product, but until we see it in the hands of our customers, we have no idea what it really is or what it really means. It's only when millions of people get their hands on it that they tell us how it's supposed to be used. You know, it seems like that's how he really thinks and talks.
We should now the defect section of the program. Apple has patched 11.1.1 the autocorrect. Did we mention this last week? Maybe we did. I think we did, but they've patched it. I did want to show the Ohio State trolling Apple with their card stunt. Where they show the A, you got to look quickly. They show the A question mark.
Jeremy Burgess, the Emojipedia guy, was fantastic because he redid the iPhone 10 ad with you know exclamation point, square question mark phone 10.
Jeremy, we love Jeremy. He's the co-chair of the Unicode Emoji Committee. Go ahead.
I do have to say I really that kind of a mistake is so big and so embarrassing, and I don't mean this as a joke. Across the way, that's the sort of stuff that I associate with like Samsung. That's the sort of mistake that I associate with lesser companies. I don't associate that kind of mistake with Apple. And this, combined with other things that I've been picking up here and there, makes me wonder if Apple needs to take another look at its quality control when it comes to software. I feel as though that's not a mistake that would have made it into the wild a couple of years ago.
There have been a number of those.
Apparently, it was a machine learning system that went for some reason. What was supposed to happen with the machine learning and the way it works now with QuickType is that if Andy invents a new word like bazoogala and it becomes super popular, the system learns it and then offers it as a suggestion or knows how it's spelled, so doesn't mark it as an incorrect word, and it propagates that throughout the QuickType system. But for some reason, instead of leaving autocorrect, you know, minuscule I to majuscule I to uppercase I, it learned that the letter, the small I, should be corrected to small I/ weird emoji non-break space character that created this unrenderable character, and then proceeded to propagate that to everybody's iPhone.
Oh, interesting.
So, I mean, I'm glad it wasn't Skynet, but like, and I can, like, this is the kind of robot gone wild I can take. But it is like you see celebrities on Instagram.
I'm still seeing a lot of tweets like that. Do you, it never happened to me, I don't think, but do you not notice it happening? Does it just like you write the tweet, it says I.
You don't see it.
And
it
you send it
on your
and
screen.
You don't see it.
Yeah, and then when the social network renders it, it has a problem rendering the
characters. That's the issue. Okay. Yeah. So I may have had it and just didn't know. I should look back through my tweets.
And apparently the more it happened, like the more you saw it, the more the system learned it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. But this, once again, this seems like the sort of, whether it's machine learning or not, it seems like the sort of problem that it's unusual for Apple to release this into the wild. It seems as though there would have been, if it's possible for average Joe to encounter this problem on their own phone, it should have been possible for QA testers inside of Apple to have encountered it as well.
Well, but maybe not. Maybe that's one of those things that shows up as people use it, right?
Yeah, when you get to millions of users. Yeah. But like I said, you're not used to seeing any problems of that magnitude. It's been years since we've had a real egg freckles scale problem with an Apple product, and this is egg freckles in the 21st century.
Yeah. Fortunately, I never use the word "I," so I haven't run into it. It did not seem to look.
There's no "I" in Mac Break.
I use the "I." I actually am embarrassed at how often I use the word "I," but I've been fortunate. Somehow I managed to miss putting "I" into my. I also shoot a lot on Instagram. I'm just looking real quickly because
you should do what Andy does and speak of himself in the third person always. It's way more arrogant, and you avoid using that.
Leo Laporte would never do that.
And it loves yogurt.
Well, what about this green line? Is that a hardware bug? The green line of death?
I would just take that back to an Apple store and ask for a replacement. Yeah, that's just I wouldn't even want to pretend to mess with that.
No, yeah. It's a green line that's appearing on the display of some, not all, iPhone 10s. Probably very few, really.
And I bet Apple engineers would be very, very grateful to actually have that back so they can take a look at what happened.
This
seems like something that would happen to a handful of phones in the early batches, and then you will never see it again because they will figure out why that wasn't caught in manufacturing or why that was a defect that happened in manufacturing.
Yep. Sometimes little bugs or surprise uses of devices are good as well as bad. Here is a fellow who was kite surfing. He had his
I love this story.
Series 3 Apple Watch on. We never thought this would. This is the kind of thing Apple would say, but it actually happened. He ran into shark infested waters. Apparently, kind of a shark nursery. A lot of baby sharks. He couldn't get the. He crashed into it. He couldn't get the hydrofoil and kite back together after the crash. He was a mile offshore. He was fortunately wearing his Series 3 with cellular Apple Watch. So he called his kids to say, I'm going to be delayed. And then he called back to say, can you call the Ventura Harbor Patrol?
I see. I love the story because he looked at his watch to tell the time. And then he's like, oh, my God, I have a cell signal. I'm going to call my kids and get the number. It's such a cool sort of discovery of technology. Yeah.
Yeah. And then as he saw the boat coming in, he called again and said, I'm over here.
Yeah, you went the wrong way.
Oh, you're gone. I'm over here. Come back. 100 feet. See all those sharks? That's me in the middle.
This is how humanity is going to end. Because people like that who said, hey, where in the entire planet should I go windsurfing? I know. How about in the middle of a shark nursery? Those are people who get in the old system, get eliminated from the gene pool. The problem gets nipped at some point. Now, oh, wait, no, I've got enough discretionary income. I can buy myself a free pass from Darwin. That's not right, man. It's just not right.
And this is also interesting, although a little bit speculative, but it seems AI can help the Apple Watch predict high blood pressure and sleep apnea. How about that? That's the problem where you stop breathing in the middle of the night and you end up having to wear a CPAP machine to keep you breathing. And, of course, sleep apnea can kill you in the long run. It's certainly not good for you. Research was presented yesterday at the American Heart Association meeting in Anaheim that the Apple heart rate sensor and step counter can make a fair prediction of whether a person has high blood pressure or sleep apnea. And this would be huge. Now, this is not Apple doing this, I think. Maybe it is. Says a study independent of Apple. Maybe.
I wouldn't put it past them. I mean, this is, once again, long-range. This is the sort of long-range planning you can get into when you've got $250 billion in the bank. You can decide, well, we have a plan for the Mac in 5 years. We've got a plan for the iOS in 10 years. But we also have a plan so that we can, again, impact human evolution to keep breeding every new generation will be more likely to be buying Apple products because we're causing people who buy Apple products to live long enough to propagate.
Actually,
Chuck said eyes black as coal, Leo.
This is ironically a
couple. How about fertility monitoring? Once you see every Apple iWatch becomes with fertility monitoring built in, it's like, ooh, ovulating. You want to have sex right now. I've already Apple Pay ordered so that Chianti that you guys like, and Apple Music has a bunch of Barry Manilow and Hester Wong records ready for you.
So it's from a company called Cardiogram, which ironically was founded by former Google employees and informed by their work on speech recognition for Android phones and the Google Assistant. They paired with the University of California, San Francisco, and I've just downloaded their app. They make an app called Cardiogram.
Yeah.
Which apparently they had data from 6,000 Apple Watch users enrolled in a study on mobile health. They used artificial neural networks to turn speech. Well, no, I'm sorry, to turn the heart this information. The system called Deep Heart gets heart rate and step data from multiple people, and then, of course, maps that to information they ask for, because in the study they have questionnaires about their health conditions, and they were able to actually predict, according to their report, atrial fibrillation from Apple Watch data. With 1 week of data on Aware, the algorithms can predict hypertension with roughly 80% accuracy, sleep apnea with about 90% accuracy. Wow. I'm downloading it right now.
Yeah. Just don't log in with Facebook. Otherwise, everyone else who has cardio things will start being suggested as friends.
That would be an interesting test. I will log in with Facebook just to see. I don't have Facebook on my phone, so I no longer log in with Facebook because it doesn't know my Facebook password, and it's a pain in the butt. Boston Dynamics has modified their robotic dog to make it a little bit less scary. Kid-friendly yellow? I don't know.
It looked like zombie undead. It was so freaky.
Yeah, not sure. I'm happier with the new. It's called Spot Mini.
And no.
Ah, that's terrifying.
It's going to be hunting us down. They're creating sentinels. Why don't we see this?
God. Maybe they should take a cue from Microsoft and just like with their laptops, cover it with that sort of felt material.
Yeah, make it fabric. Spot Mini, by the way, is not mini. It's huge.
Oh. Didn't they watch the X-Men? Don't they know how this ends?
If you haven't seen the video and you're listening to us, you've got The Verge has a animated GIF of the Spot Mini looking straight at you.
I just want to see Neil A. Patel jump down and hammer fist the thing.
I am downloading that. I'm making that my profile picture. That is awesome.
Do it.
That is terrifying.
Like, oh. Human. And then the whole front turns into a laser beam and fries you.
Yeah. But isn't it interesting that is usually we're seeing these demo videos like in the casual in the backyard of the lab or inside the lab of look how fast it can jump over a table. This is like here's a teaser for the actual trailer we're going to be releasing soon for this dog robot.
Like a horror movie.
You look at American politics, the things that we're willing to embrace, even though they are on the surface quite scary and disgusting, Americans have a lot of latitude as concerned.
Come robot with me dogs if you want to live.
Coming soon to a theater near you. Let's take a break. Your picks of the week finally coming up. Finally, but I can tell you my pick right up front, and I don't think I will surprise anybody when I tell you I love the Joby Gorilla Pod. In fact, it has been a pick many times on this show. New designs are getting better and better. Maybe you've seen, of course, the Gorilla Pod is known for its ball joint sockets. I'll give you this. They come in all sizes. This is actually one big enough to use with a DSLR. This is my, and I love you can just fold these around and rubberized rings and foot grips give you stability on uneven surfaces. I've taken these on places like where you put it around the railing. You know, you don't a tripod you could attach to a microphone This is the kinder, gentler version of that Boston Dynamics robot. You can mount flashes. It's great to have several of them so you can put your flashes around, video lights. It's using the quarter 20 mount, so you anything with a standard thread can be mounted with it. I love Joby. I didn't realize this. They started in 2006. That was the first GorillaPod. Now 10 million sold. Grip it, wrap it, stand it. No matter what, you can use a GorillaPod. This is the GripTight 1 GorillaPod stand that has a great holder for your smartphone, any size smartphone. And I have the new one with magnetic feet. That's fabulous. It sticks tight to anything metal. Choose the GorillaPod that's right for you at Joby.com. And they've got a special deal for you, 15% off your order. This is a must-have for the holidays. If you have a family member with a camera phone, if they take pictures, if they have a SLR, anything in between, it's a great stocking stuffer. Look at all the different Jobys. Joby is the best. I love these guys. Joby.com, promo code TWIT, T-W-I-T, at checkout, and you'll save 15% off your order. This should just be a pick on every show.
We'd just amazing it. Stocking stuffers, by the way. Kids love them. We got them. Yeah, oh, we got perfect. Them for the kids. They just fantastic. Well,
I'll tell you what. Like, you give it to a 10-year-old, they're going to be doing stop-action movies all of a sudden, right?
Totally, all the time. It's
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, yeah. I know what I can do with this instantly.
I always have a GorillaPod in my backpack or in my my notebook bag. If I'm going to be out of the house overnight, because it's not just a tripod, it's also a wrap it around a pole and make it 6 feet off the ground pod. It's also a hang it off the top of a makeup mirror, wall-mounted mirror or something. It's the amount of things you can do with it. It's I love these things where you get to make up your own solution to the problem that's right in front of you. And that's what a GorillaPod lets you do.
And they now have, I just saw this. Oh, boy. This is the high-end DSLR machined aluminum version of the GorillaPod. Same ball and
Alex
socket
Lindsay
joints.
Just cost me money.
I must have with a ball head mount and everything. That's the tripod you want. The GorillaPod 5K machined aluminum flexible tripod for DSLR. It holds up to 5 kilograms. Oh, got to have. I didn't even know about this.
By the way, you can put like lights and you can put anything on these. Anything that has a standard mount on it. You can put lights. You can put rigs. You can put anything on them. They're fantastic. So if you're shooting and there's like a tree and you want to hang a light off of it, just use the GorillaPod. Put the light on it. Hang it.
You bet.
You're in business.
Yeah. Oh, incidentally, I didn't know this is even makes it more desirable. This has the standard Arca mount. So I put an Arca frame from Really Right Stuff on all my cameras. So this has quick release basically built into it. I want this. Mommy, can I have a Joby GorillaPod for Christmas?
Mommy, can I have one more Joby?
More Joby, please. This is beautiful. Aluminum. My God.
And that red is fierce. That's a fierce red.
My God. It looks like the brake calipers on my Tesla.
It's like the product red iPhone, too.
Yes. Mm. Mm. All right. Mm. Who wanted to go first? Andy, you said you wanted to go first. So we're going to let you go first. Pick of the week.
I was joking, but pick of the week. Oh, I haven't even hit the return on what it is. I've been looking at meditation apps on iOS and Android. And so I've been playing a lot with an app called Headspace and an app called Calm. And they're both really, really good. And I was surprised at how hugely popular they are. I have to say that I am the first person who disabled the little feature on the Apple Watch that keeps interrupting you to say, why don't you calm down? Like, I would be calm if you didn't keep interrupting me while in the middle of a show. I like both of them. I don't really have a preference of the two of them right now. I like Headspace because they both do one thing really well, which is you don't have to sign up for a class in meditation or a seminar and whatever and show up someplace. It really can be sort of like a downtime activity where you've got 12 minutes before, before the show, I was ready and set up actually like a quarter to two. So I got 15 minutes, but I don't know what to do with. So, okay, great. I'll do like a meditation exercise, or I'll see what Calm wants me to do at this point. And you can sort of sneak in these little training things in which it will say, here's how we will guide you through a timed meditation. The Headspace does something that I don't know if I like or not. I mean that literally. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, because it is saying, well, what do you want help with? Do you want help with anxiety? Do you want help with focus? Do you want help with this? And so based on that, it will give you exercises in meditation or in mindfulness that will help you with focus or help you with anxiety. I don't have the wherewithal at this point to know whether that is snake oil or whether that there is actual science behind here's why we're giving you these lessons instead of these other ones. All I know is that it makes it interesting to learn this new technique of not just there's a difference between just like doing nothing and staring at the wall and actually trying to slow your pulse rate, actually trying to look for muscles in your neck and in your back and in your arms and your shoulders that are tensed up that you didn't know until you started looking for tensed up muscles. And I learned to play the ukulele just by snatches of half hour here or 20 minutes there, an hour there. It's kind of interesting that over the course of a couple of weeks, now I'm sort of in the habit of, hey, I got a little bit of time. I think I'll practice this meditation thing a little bit more. So the Headspace is, they do charge you for additional lessons. They do charge you for additional features. Out of the box, it's very, very good on its own. But they're very, very good apps. They're very, very mature apps. They've got a huge community. So, you know, it's something that has a lot of polish and a lot of support to it. So I recommend them to anybody who thinks that they have not been spending quite enough time focusing on their resting heart rate and they can't remember the last time they did not feel as though their head were full of bees. And this either of these two apps will help you out, I think, with that problem.
I should mention Headspace was a sponsor. I'm a big fan. Love Andy Puddicombe. I love his voice when I'm listening. Calm.com is great. And we probably should mention that Kevin Rose now has a very nice free meditation app called Oak. It's simple, but it has guided meditations. And you grow a tree from a tiny acorn to a mighty oak as you meditate or breathe. What is the third? There's three categories of things you can do to grow your oak. One is breathing and one is meditation. Good choice, I think, Andy. It's amazing what even a little bit of mindful meditation can do.
Yeah, I stress out. I don't think in an unhealthy way, but it's in the normal human of travel through airports really, really sucks.
Yeah.
And one thing that really helped me with it, and this was actually a couple of years ago, when I sort of made it a rule that I'm not going to look at my phone when I have downtime. I distinctly remember the first time I tried this thing. I don't know if this was in San Francisco or LA, where I'm sitting in that area waiting for that little shuttle bus that will take you to the gate or whatever. And this is a place where I would like check Twitter or check Instagram. I said, no, I'm going to sit here and just look at the letter A in that sign in the middle of that word. Nice. And I'm just going to do nothing but look at that A and not take my focus out of it. And by the time it was like 15-minute wait, I was like, I felt like I'd slept for about 8 hours. So now that's a rule. I try not to check my phone to fill this time. I try to, again, especially in a high stress situation like that, where it's like, I don't know if I'm going to make my gate. I don't know if I still got to go check my slides for tomorrow. Like, nope, just stare at that letter A in the word baggage. Either of those two A's will work. Just do nothing but stare at it and enjoy the black space and the white space, the little triangle in the middle.
I'd be curious. Oak. The nice thing about Headspace is it's like you have a whole course of stuff and so forth. But these are just simple guided meditations. Yeah. You can choose the sound you want, ohms or waterfalls or white noise. I'm going to have a little sound here. I'll turn it up so you hear it. And then you can have a little guided meditation with you set the amount of time. I think it's just kind of neat, and then your oak tree grows as you go. I think Kevin's done a really nice job, and he gives it away. So that's pretty neat too. Oak is a free app on iOS only. Yeah. All right, Renee.
All right, so Leo, you said this was pronounced halide. Is that correct?
Silver halide. Halide. Those are the crystals that are in the old style film.
And that makes a lot of sense because Sebastian DeWitt, like all good-hearted people, is a huge Leica fan.
I'm downloading it right now.
This is an iPhone app, and it's newly updated for iOS, for iPhone 10 as well. And it's just a beautiful he is a longtime photographer, longtime, you know, image professional. He worked at Apple. He did the stitched leather on Find My Friends. He did Double Twist.
No, really?
Yeah, totally. That's he did Double Twist, which was the really good app for Android. He actually invented in the early days anti-aliasing for Pentile displays when they first became a thing.
Wow.
So really, really good designer. And this is the app that he's been making himself for a while. Well, he has a partner. He does a design for it. And it's just a very beautiful camera app, but it has a very tactile interface. It lets you shoot in RAW, which is what you were mentioning earlier. So you can really pull, you know, manipulate all that data. It lets you get to the depth data, the manual controls, the focusing, the exposure, all of that stuff. And in a way that is very tactile. Like, I think he really wanted to pull out the tactility. Is that a word? I'm going to say it anyway. The tactility of the interface and make it something that was joyful for you to use, even though you're using a modern sort of a gadget. So there are a lot of third-party camera apps. They all do similar things, but in very different ways. And this is just a very, very nice way. It might suit your the way that you shoot, but it's got a, you just swipe up to get more. Like, it's very simple to start, but you can swipe up to get more controls. You can swipe over to do more manual things. You can tap between JPEG or now HEIF and RAW to be able to get all that data from the sensor. And I was shooting with it in New York City when I first got iPhone 10, and I really, really liked it.
It's got manual focus. I do like it that you, as you're doing an exposure, you swipe up or down to brighten or darken it. That's a very natural thing to do. And the good thing about it on the iPhone 10 is you can really trust the display to give you a good readout on what you're getting. You swipe sideways here. You can change to manual focus. This is nice. You're right.
Yeah,
I like it. This is very interesting.
You can pull up to get a few more extra.
Do you use this? Would you use this as your daily camera or just for special?
I use it for photo walks. I really subscribe to what Andy mentioned a few shows ago, where the strength of iPhone's built-in camera is from pocket to shot. It's very fast, and you almost always get something you can use, especially if you take a few shots. But when I'm doing a photo walk or I'm intending to do photography, I'll typically go to a third-party app because they give me access to those more thoughtful controls and parameters that I want when I'm sort of my mind clicks from I wasn't expecting to shoot. I need to get that picture because that kid is so cute right now. To I'm deliberately going out and I want to get a bunch of good photography.
Now tell me what this does, because if I swipe right, I can get the depth camera. And it's giving me this weird kind of...
That's like portrait mode, where it's recording the depth data from the photograph along with just the regular picture data.
So what do I do with this? I mean, it looks weird.
It burns it into the picture, so you can do all sorts of things with it later. Like, you can get portrait mode off of it, or you can apply the effects to it.
Okay, so I have the RAW. This is just additional information that's put in the picture. Yeah. And then I would I edit it with the photos?
Example, you can pull it into Photoshop now, and in Photoshop they will put the depth data into a separate channel, and you can even manipulate that channel and do anything you want with it, including fixing it up if the edge detection isn't great.
I love it that you have a histogram. That is very useful. Yep. You can turn that off and on, of course, but that is very useful.
Those horns are getting, like, he uses it for a histogram, and there's a new Reddit app called Apollo that gives you a volume slider in the left horn.
Yeah, so left horn is the histogram, right horn is the brightness.
Yeah.
So I really do like that you can see that. That is pretty good use of the horns.
And it's out of the way. It's like a
embracing the ears.
Yeah, embrace the ears.
It's like a watch complication. It's peripheral information. It's not what you're staring at, but it's in the corner of your eye if you ever need to look at it.
This is sweet.
The idea that, and the great thing about that placement is that it leaves the preview area completely unfussed with. So you see nothing but the picture. I've noticed, for instance, when I switched to a new camera 3 years ago, a lot of my pictures were framed like with empty space at the top, because the default place where they put like exposure data was stretched on the top there. So it's really cool that they're basically using those two ears for information that otherwise would be covering up parts of your photo.
I might actually put this in place of my camera app on the dock and use this more. What do you think?
Yeah. No, it's totally, because you can get to the default camera in many ways now. You can use that 3D touch button. You can use a swipe sideways. You can use you can ask Siri for it if you want to. So it's nice to have those other apps available.
Yeah. I mean, the camera does video, which this doesn't. So, Halide.
Yes.
Very nice. $5, $4.99 in the U.S. App Store.
Speaking of video, quick plug, Serenity Caldwell put up her iPhone X camera review, which is entirely the World Roller Derby Championships shot. She got a media pass. She went with all the ESPN photographers with their giant cameras, and she sat there and she shot it with an iPhone 10, and she was really happy with the results. It was more constrained. Like, she had to pick her shots far more carefully than someone with, you know, an infinite zoom lens. But she got some amazing, especially the slow-mo footage. She got some amazing 4K and slow-mo footage.
These are gorgeous photos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really nice job. Yeah, that's iMore.com, folks.
Yeah.
Look at that. So she didn't skate. She just watched from the sideline.
After she skated, she did all her matches, and then she put on her media hat and went to the media pit and the photo pit and started going and started recording other matches.
I wonder, so she has this picture of her with her iPhone and all these guys with their big cannons. I wonder if they
side eyeing her.
I wonder really how much grief she got. That's pretty funny.
I bet one of the things that made her shots as good, if not better, is that she is like, she just came from actually participating.
Yeah, she knows what's going on here. Right. Yeah.
So exactly. She knows where to go. She knows where she can read where the action is going to be. And she can, yes, you can't take a 1/500th of a second shot at 10,000 ISO, but you don't need that kind of stuff when you know that, okay, in 3 seconds, that jammer is going to be sitting right there and three people blocking are going to be on their butts. Right. I better have the camera ready for that.
Right. Yeah. She's got the, oh, ow. Wow. Very nice. iMore.com, the place to go to find out, to see that and find out all about what you can do with your iPhone, your Apple Watch, your iPad. I only said Mac a couple of times in this show. I know we call it Mac Break Weekly. December, we're looking forward to an iMac. Are you going to get the iMac Pro, Renee?
Pardon me, sorry. They were testing a toxic waste warning in my city, and they said it might go off, so I just quickly went and closed the window.
Holy cow.
Yeah, okay. They gave us a warning and everything, but I forgot that it was happening at 4:30.
Toxic waste warning coming up in 3 minutes. You know what? We're not going to end the show. I want to hear it.
It doesn't want to check the weather stripping for an alert like that. That's...
You need a molecule. I'm going to have one sent to you right away.
Yeah, totally.
Holy cow.
Holy cow. So I just ran quickly and closed the window.
Renee Ritchie, iMore.com in Montreal, where the toxic waste is about to be released.
Yeah, thank you so much, Leo. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. Catch his great podcast, too, at iMore. And of course,
I apologize. We're relaunching Vector. It's an older show of mine. I'm starting completely fresh.
Good.
The first episode should be online today. It's Sebastian DeWitt from Halide, Brad Ellis, who's famous designer, Linda Dong, who worked on Apple Pencil and now works on Lyft, and Mark Edwards of Bajango, all talking about designing specifically for iPhone 10.
It's not on the menu anymore. You got to go to imore.com/podcasts. Podcasts. And when Victor goes up, you will know. Of course, the iMore show's there and a whole lot more. Hey, really great to have you on. As always, we'll see you in a week.
Thank you,
Andy Yanako, exactly the same, man. Couldn't do it without you. Thank you so much. Andy's at the Chicago Sun-Times. You can find his website at CWOB.com. Follow him on Flickr and Instagram because he's a great photographer, too.
Also, I'm going to D.C. for the rest of the week, so that's my last phase of like iPhone 10 pictures. So there's going to be a whole bunch of annoying pictures from the iPhone 10 for later this week.
And don't forget his Material podcast. It's about Android at Relay.fm. He does a lot of shows on Relay, on Mike Hurley's Relay. So thank you, everybody, for being here. And we will see you next Tuesday around about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1900 UTC now for Mac Break Weekly. You can watch live at twit.tv/live. Listen in the chat room and chat away at irc.twit.tv. You can also get on-demand audio and video from our website, twit.tv/mbw, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Lots of great Twit apps out there. There's Overcast and Pocket Cast and iTunes podcast app. And if you subscribe, you'll be sure to get every single episode the minute it's available. Thanks for being here, but get back to work, friends, because guess what? I'm sorry to say, break time is over!